I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hello, Houston, with the OG, John Lopez, Wade Smith. I'm Jeremy Branham, in for Landry Locker. We're not overlooking Denver, are we? We're not overlooking the Broncos on Sunday, are we? The Texans have to continue their momentum going into the final month of the season.
I spent all week trying to convince myself into, hey, man, this is going to be a prove-it game in terms of just how much better this team is than they've been in the past, that it's no longer the almost team, that it's no longer the, oh, same old Texans team. And I get to Friday, Wade, and I'm like, I don't know what I think anymore. I want to talk myself into, they got this. They're finally going to prove to us that they can back up a big win with a paint-by-numbers, you know, deliberate, just get it done, never in doubt win. And then I start looking a little deeper yesterday and this morning, and maybe the Broncos are just talking me into – they're a little more dangerous than I thought.
What are the Broncos saying that's making you feel this way? Because I just look at that roster and I'm like, man, I'm sorry, but y'all don't have a chance.
I part of it is on the drive home last night, I was listening to Clint Sterner, and he made the Broncos sound like the 85 Bears. He really did.
He has a way about doing that, about whatever he's talking about.
And
right?
I'm like, good God, we're going to lose. I mean, this is he made him sound offensively like the greatest show on turf.
Yeah.
And so I know he was exaggerating because, you know, he does have that knack, you know, of kind of making you feel that way. But he made some good points. I mean, they have some weapons offensively that, especially against a secondary that maybe has played better in the last couple of days, but certainly has been prone to injury and certainly bad performances. Talking about some of the things, you know, that their defensive line can do. Obviously, we'll get to Von Miller, but some of the things their defense, I think, did you say seventh in scoring or something like that?
Yeah, there's both their top 10 in scoring and their top 10 in yards allowed, too, defensively.
And
defensively,
like,
they're pretty good.
And I'm like, all right, we'll just forget everything I said Monday through Thursday.
Well, I tell you what, man. I tell you what, when you look at that team, to me, it's not about that team. It's about the Texans. And everything that I'm hearing coming out of NRG from the various young players, and I think it's important that it's the young players I'm hearing this from, is they're all about the Broncos. They're taking them seriously. It almost sounds like they're under a zombie spell over there at NRG to where they're not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe. They're going to treat the Denver Broncos as if they are the New England Patriots, and so we're going to go out there and do our best. I listen to Justin Reed talk about the Broncos and listen to Jacob Martin after the game talk about the Broncos and talking about being in the moment and worrying about this game. And so that gives me confidence. If you get the young guys on the team buying in, the veteran guys know that in any given Sunday you can get your head beat in. And so if you got the young guys on board too, to me that gives me confidence that they're going to play well and they're not going to take the Broncos lightly.
The message has been good. The message has been good since they beat the Patriots, right? Bill O'Brien, every week in the NFL, we got to worry about Denver. The players, too. Like you said, Smitty, you've heard that from the young players. But this Broncos team has some pieces to scare you. And, Smitty, it sounds like you're not – it sounds like you're not worried about Denver at all.
No, I'm not worried about Denver at all because, first of all, their offensive line is the closest thing to trash that you could say in the NFL. No, dead ass, seriously. Like, if you traded this year's offensive line – from the Denver Broncos to 2 years ago offensive line for the Houston Texans, people would be upset. Like, man, we got to get better. I want the guys that we had 2 years ago. So their line is not good at all. And you put that line against the Texans defensive line, and them boys going to eat. And so we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show more specifically. But if your line is garbage, you got a young quarterback, you have one skilled receiver, and a running back that could possibly cause any damage, to me, you're not going to be able to put up points. And they've struggled with that all year long.
See, I look at that offense to be better than people think. The offensive line, I'm not going to push back on you at all, because we had Mark Schlereth talk about the trenches for Denver has been bad on both sides, the offense and the defense. But I look at the skill position guys for the Broncos. to me, it's better than what New England ran out there against you last week. Cortland Sutton had an outstanding game the first time he played with Drew Lock. Had two touchdown passes. Deshaun Hamilton's been a pretty good slot guy. Noah Fant yeah. is legit. That guy can play. And those two running backs they got, Philip Lindsay, Royce Freeman, that's a pretty good two-headed monster. In fact, I would say that Lindsay and Freeman together is a better pair than Hyde and Johnson.
I don't know if you can put Fant in that category because I was listening to Brandon Stokely talk about him last night on Clint Sterner's show with him and Landry, and Stokely was saying, yeah, Fant is a good young player, and he's, you know, he's shown some flashes, but he is not there yet. And mm-hmm. so that's the guy, that, you know, Stokely and those guys, they cover him and see him day in and day out, week in and week out. And so if he's saying that about Noah Fant, to me, he's somebody that is a boom or bust prospect. He's not consistent yet.
And then I go back to the games that they have played in the last month, month and a half. I mean, they had teams on the road. They had the Vikings, you know, obviously. They beat the Colts, I believe they beat the Colts. They, you know, all of a sudden, I guess what I'm worried about is, you know, years of watching this team, you know, it just has all the markings of, oh, great. So now just when they, you know, just when I'm starting to believe, are they going to, and it is about the Texans. I agree with you. Are they going to let me down? And not necessarily, you know, take this team for granted. I don't think anybody over there is going to do that, maybe subconsciously, but that's a whole different conversation. But I think just like they're going to be prepared, they're going to be confident, they're going to be ready to play, they're not going to be overconfident. Maybe they just are facing a team that's better than anybody thinks in certain areas, like what you're talking about.
They lost to the Colts by 2 points on the road. But still, that's a competitive game. It's good enough to show that they can beat you. If they lose by two on the road to a Colts team in week eight, they also lost by four at Minnesota, another team that's going to be in the playoffs in the NFC. So they've given some teams some trouble. They beat the Chargers last week when they were desperate for a victory. So they're playing better ball, and that defense is pretty good.
One thing to keep in mind that kind of goes along with what you're saying, Lopez, is the Texans lost the first game of the year, won the next two. Lost the next game, won the next two. They've been – and so they just won their last two games. So
yeah.
Supposedly it's time for them to lose again, but I'm just saying you go by the trend, and so hopefully that trend doesn't come true.
Justin Reed doesn't think that the Broncos are a tune-up or a team that they're overlooking.
I mean, Denver is probably the best 4-8 team in the league. You know, they're not having the season that they want to have right now, but they still have ultra amount of talent on their squad. Von Miller's back. Kareem's going to be back in his home city, wanting to play really well. They do have the rookie at quarterback. It's only his second game in the league, first on the road. But they still have a lot of talent. Cortland Sutton's been having a phenomenal year. He's making a whole bunch of great catches on the 50-50 ball, just throwing it up. So that's something we have to look out for. And just defensively, too, they still do a good job. In the football league, the National Football League, you see it every week that teams get upset if they don't take a team serious. So, you know, we're not going to be that team.
He also called Landry an idiot later on in that interview, which is always fun to hear.
That's always a good thing.
He was on with Clint Sterner yesterday. You know, he called the Broncos the best 4-8 team in the NFL. And sometimes you just hear that and it's cliche and it's just looking ahead at your next opponent. But he might be right. The other 4-8 teams in the NFL, the New York Jets, I think the Broncos are probably playing a little bit better football than the Jets right now. Jacksonville's on the way down. They just beat the Chargers, who are also 4-8. And then I guess if you want to throw Detroit and Arizona in that mix because they're 3-8-1, let's just put them on that category. I would agree with them. If we're going to, you know, critique things that players have to say as, you know, players speak, coach speak, I think Justin Reed's right. They're the best 4-8 team in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree, because if I had to put the Broncos against any of those teams you listed and they say, hey, they're going to have a matchup on Sunday, I would pick the Broncos to win all of those games. So Justin Reed wasn't just blowing smoke, man. He was keeping 100. Like, they're the best 4-8 team in the NFL, but they're a 4-8 team. So if we're a 4-8 team and you're an 8-4 team and you got big things on the horizon, you got to put a team like that away and put them out their misery early in the ballgame.
One other thing that kind of got me thinking, I just hate Clint Sterner for this, for getting me good. I really do. Well, he is, but he's not. Because I started digging into what he was talking about with their defense. And you mentioned, you know, the top 10 and or 8 or whatever it is in scoring defense. And I think in other defense, the one that really gets me is the Texans against their offense. I've been really – the one thing I've criticized or at least been skeptical of with this Texans team, Wade, is their pass rush with no JJ.
Yeah.
Especially when the cornerbacks or the secondary is you know, given that cushion, that leads to third down conversions. And so I looked it up, and I had no idea. I should have, but I had no idea this was the fact. The Texans are 31st in the NFL in third down conversions, second to last in opponent third down conversions.
So defensively,
and so you got a quarterback that maybe a young quarterback that's maybe nothing to lose, 4-8, second start, gonna have a little time. He seems to be liked by his head coach, whether it's lip service or not. You know, you got to hold him on third down because that's where you're the weakest, and this kid might just be, you know, screw it. You know, I'm just gonna sling it.
Exactly, and going along with that, yeah, think about it. This team is 4-8, got a young quarterback, young team, so you're gonna have to stop him on third down. And even if you do, I would think they would have a more likelihood of going for it on fourth down. And so when you have a team that struggles with getting off the field, now you're gonna force your defense to play extra possessions. You're gonna keep the ball away from Deshaun Watson. So you gotta hope that isn't the case. But that's something that they've been dealing with all year. And a lot of times they have a problem getting off the field on third down when it comes to guys getting illegal holding penalties, or just doing something silly that keeps a team on the field longer than it should be. So that's something the Texans do have to definitely work out and work towards on Sunday.
We're just getting started on In the Loop, a Friday edition of the show, as we get you ready for Sunday night or Sunday afternoon when the Houston Texans take on the Denver Broncos. A little bit later, Lee Sterling will be on. Chance for you to make some money on this football weekend. We'll also break down this game against the Broncos from every way imaginable. He's the OG, John Lopez, Wade Smith, Jeremy Brand. I'm in for Landry Locker. When we come back, a familiar face returning home on Sunday, Kareem Jackson coming back. Well, the Broncos and the Texans kind of flip-flop members of the secondary this offseason between Kareem Jackson and Bradley Roby. Who got the best end of that? We discuss it next on In the Loop on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
I call him the OG, him and J. Joe, but when I first got here, he was a guy that I looked up to, you know, gained a lot of information from, you know, on and off the field. We still communicate and talk and support each other. He's been having a heck of a year. It's going to be fun to, you know, see what he did, because when he was here, you know, he was very physical, made a lot of plays in the passing game, and he was that leader, he was that heart and soul. So you can see, you know, that's what they wanted in Denver for him, and he's been given, you know, everything he had, you know, and have, you know, for that defense and for that team. So it's going to be fun to be able to go against them and compete.
Deshaun Watson calling Kareem Jackson the OG. We call John Lopez the OG. Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham, in
copyright
for Landry Locker. Yeah, I mean, what is Deshaun
Watson
doing?
I will be filing a suit on Monday.
The worst thing that he's done in 3 years is calling Kareem Jackson the OG and not John Lopez.
The original.
The OG. Kareem Jackson spoke to the media in Denver yesterday, said that coming home to play his former team, the Texans, will not be personal.
No, it's not personal. For me, it's another game on the schedule. I mean, obviously with me having ties there for 9 years, and, you know, I mean, never been in this situation going back to a place where I played before, but be good to see some familiar faces and stuff. But I mean, other than that, is, you know, it's another game on the schedule, you know, and I prepare the same way I prepare any other week.
Kareem has spent all of these years in Houston, the team that took him, the team that reportedly didn't offer him a contract in the offseason. Will it not be personal for Kareem Jackson on Sunday?
For sure it's going to be personal, but it's not going to be personal against the guys on the other side of the line of scrimmage. It's going to be personal from the fact of the matter is he had to leave this city. He loved to be here. He didn't want to have to pick up and buy another house in a different place. And so when you go back and play against your former team, there's a little bit of extra oomph in everything you do. When he comes downhill to make a tackle, he's going to let it be known. If he gets the interception, don't think he won't look over to the sideline and be like, I told y'all last that I should still be here. But, you know, he's got to say what he's got to say. It's not personal.
Sure,
it's
sure.
You know, he's not going to come out and just say it, but there's definitely something there.
Nobody blames him for saying that. I mean, that's what everybody says. And I always, every time this happens, and sometimes it's more bitter than others, it's personal, but it's personal to the opposing coach and management, not the guys on the field.
Exactly.
Like, he's got a thing for Bill O'Brien, for Cal McNair, or whomever else was involved, that's who he's playing it against. But at the same time, he's not preparing like any differently. I mean, you know, it's the same thing. It's just he's going to have that extra juice.
Yeah, he's not going to, I'm going to watch an extra 3 hours of film this week, and I'm going to make sure I do an extra 10 sets on squats and then 10 sets on bench so I can get ready for the Texans. It ain't none of that, but he will have a little bit of oomph in everything that he does when he's on the field.
I'm pretty sure you got here the same year as his rookie year, didn't you?
We did, same year.
Okay, so that you'd be the perfect – I've said this for the last several years, 2-3 years. I think Kareem Jackson's one of the best stories in the history of this organization. I really do. His first couple of years, he –
it was a struggle, bro. struggled.
He got destroyed.
Yeah.
I mean, he got destroyed. And he got destroyed on the field, and he got destroyed by people like me, and he got destroyed nationally, and he got destroyed. And the reason I've got – he might be one of the most – one of the players I respect more than anybody I've ever been seen on this team. Because not only did he, like, handle it, you know, at the time, he said all the right things, but he also responded and became, like, more than just a Jag, you know, just a guy. He became a real asset. I think it's one of the best stories you know, in the history of the organization.
Yeah, man, when you look back at him in his rookie year, he struggled mightily. But the good thing that he had going for him, for one, he always was a good tackler. He's, to me, he's been the best tackling cornerback in the NFL over the past, like, 5 or 6 years. Now he's playing safety, so it's a different. He's just one of the damn good safeties that can tackle. But he had that going for him his rookie year, but he struggled. They would throw deep bombs on him. He would get pass interference penalties. They picked on him. And our defense as a whole struggled, but he was one of the guys that stood off as one of the guys that really struggled that year. But he kept putting his head down and going to work each and every day. And as time passed on, he got better and better, and eventually he became a guy that should have went to the Pro Bowl last year.
Should've.
You know what I mean? He's been a guy that's just – he's had a hell of a career, man, and I'm happy for him because he's one of those guys that does everything the right way. He's one of those guys that you want to see succeed, and so I'm happy for
Let
him.
Let me tell you a quick story. this – I was nervous saying this, but I felt like it was my job to do it. So you probably did this some. They used to have the Verizon players. We used to do the show, me and Vandermeer,
yeah,
you know, on Tuesdays. And a Texan player would come in, and we'd have him for an hour, and then they'd sign autographs and all that. I'm sure you did that as well. So it was time for Kareem Jackson to come to the Verizon show. And this is back when I was doing mornings with Vandermeer. So it was probably about 2010, 2011,
yeah, yeah,
when he was struggling. And he was the whipping boy for everyone in town. And he got to the Verizon show 20 minutes late.
Oh, no.
Oh.
And I told Vandermeer, I said, I'll do this because I know you don't, you know, I don't want to put Vandermeer in that position. So when he sat down across, I halfway thought he would, like, really come at me or you know, get angry or something. I said, Kareem, we have the audio somewhere. I'll dig in. I said, Kareem, don't you think this is why people are down on you, because they don't see what they want to see or if they need to see from a professional football player?
Yeah.
And then I just kind of went, okay, how's he going to react? And he went, yeah,
you're exactly right.
He said, "You're right. I should have been here on time."
Yeah,
and I was like, whew. I was like, Vandermeer still tells that story. He goes, "I can't believe you did that."
Put him on the spot.
Yeah, you have.
But see, Kareem is one of those type of dudes that if he makes a mistake, he's gonna own up to it and say, "Hey, I messed that up. I was late. I was 20 minutes late, or I got burnt on that play." But when you have that mentality, the chances of you being able to turn that and turn it into something positive goes up tremendously. And so that just kind of speaks to his character. Mm-hmm. And remember, he came from Alabama. So he was used to dealing with kind of a big-time, prime-time environment. And so him coming here and struggling a little bit and him expecting, like, knowing that I'm actually good and I can play this game, which is key. That was something I think I heard on an interview either the day before yesterday or yesterday, where he was saying he knew, even though he struggled early in his career, he knew he could play this game. And to me, confidence is – absolutely, it's an absolute necessity to be a good football player, and so Kareem definitely has that.
OG John Lopez, Wade Smith, Jeremy Brown. I'm in for Landry Locker discussing Kareem Jackson coming back to NRG Stadium, where he spent the first 9 years of his career. His former teammate, longtime really good friend in the secondary, his cornerback mate Jonathan Joseph with the Houston Texans, says, "Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, but there's going to be a little trash talk going on."
Oh yeah, as always. You know, anytime it's competitive, that's going to happen. That's the nature of the game. You know. There's never nothing where you cut, you know, personal anything, you know.
You're going to have J-Jo looking over Kareem on the sideline saying that he's going to shut down Cortland Sutton. You're going to have Kareem. He's playing safety now, but I bet you he has a few things to say to Jonathan Joseph on that Texan sideline.
Yeah, man, you want to beat your brother more than you want to beat anyone, because you're going to have to hear his mouth or hear their mouth after that is over with. And so you want to win that one-on-one matchup, or you want to win, like, my team against that team. And so you're going to have – it's going to be fun. I think when they say that, they truly, really mean that. Like, this is going to be a fun game because KJ's going to be over there and he's going to ball out. We know he's going to come and ball out, but we're going to ball out too.
Mm-hmm. One more from Kareem Jackson. Says that unlike Eric Weddle, he is going to give intel on the Texans.
For me, it's all about playing for the guys in this locker room and playing for this organization. You know, anything I can give them to help, you know, I mean, it's all in the name of winning, in my opinion.
You have to do that, right?
What, like, what the hell was Eric Weddle doing?
I don't know.
Didn't Eric Weddle get trucked that game, too? I think he got trucked that game where he told, he's like, yeah, I'm not going to tell any of my secrets. And Mark Ingram ran smack through his ass. Like, that you should have been telling so you would have had more help.
He's
like,
the first player I ever remember not talking.
Yeah, I mean.
I think that was fake. Like, I hope that was a fake, nice guy.
Okay, I hope so, because, listen, they will sign players off the street just to bring them in the building so that they can give intel and then get rid of them the following week because they played on that team previously. Yeah. So you being in front of a meeting room and telling, doing a scouting report on the guys, like I did that my first year here in Houston because we played the Kansas City Chiefs. And mm-hmm. so they had me talk to the D-line and the defense about the different guys that were on the Kansas City Chiefs offense that year. You're supposed to do that.
There's nothing
wrong with that at all. Mm-hmm. Nah, so I think you're right, JB. I hope that Weddle was just playing. But if he wasn't playing, he reaped what he sowed because, like I said, Mark Ingram ran through his ass.
Yeah, that was a whole weird deal with Eric Weddle. But Kareem's given the secrets on the Houston Texans, although the Texans look a little bit different than they did a year ago. So the Broncos got Kareem Jackson in the offseason. They signed him for that $33 million three-year deal. The Texans reportedly never extended an offer to Kareem Jackson. He's playing safety now in Denver. The Texans, meanwhile, got Bradley Roby. He's been injured some, but he came back this last game against New England, had a really good game. When he's been healthy and on the field this season, he is making plays. And when he's been on the field, he's been pretty good for the Houston Texans this season. So who got the better end of it? The Houston Texans with Bradley Roby at corner or the Denver Broncos with Kareem Jackson at safety?
Man, that's I've got to give a slight edge to Denver. Roby's been but it's close. I mean, it's close to me. Especially lately, Roby's been real good. Obviously made the play of the year, in my opinion, last week. But I got to give a slight edge to Kareem.
I have to agree with you, man, because Bradley Roby, like you said, he's played well for the Texans, but he's missed too many games.
Yeah.
Like, K-Jack has not missed. He's been available, and he's played at a really high level. So just basing it off of that, I'm going to give it to Kareem. But it's definitely close. Both teams are happy with the guys that they have in their locker room right now. And that's the sign of a good exchange, even though it wasn't a trade. But, hey, you let one guy go so you can bring in another one. And so it worked out for both teams.
I'm going to make the case for Bradley Roby when we come back. Also, the Rockets got the response victory that they needed last night above the border in Canada. They went into Toronto, defeated the Raptors, just what they needed after that controversy against San Antonio. Also, when we return, some steaming hot food takes from Justin James Watt. With the OG, John Lopez, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham, in for Landry Locker. This is In the Loop on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham, filling in for Landry Locker alongside with the OG, John Lopez. So here's why I think that the Texans got the better end of the quote-unquote trade between Bradley Roby and Kareem Jackson. The Texans needed a cornerback. Bradley Roby is a better cornerback than Kareem Jackson. Jackson, since then, has been moved to safety Denver. Yeah, Kareem Jackson's playing safety in Denver. Also,
no, I'm saying, is he a better cornerback than Kareem Jackson?
Oh, I think
for
so.
For sure.
Yeah?
Bradley Roby's
why don't you think
corner.
He is?
I think Kareem has been very underrated because he was moved around so much last year. He played slot, corner.
He did.
He played safety, and he generally, I mean, he wasn't toast, that's for sure.
No, he can definitely play the cornerback position well, but when you compare the two, Bradley Roby is a better
more of a pure
corner. He's a pure corner. I'm going to run around the field with whoever your fastest, best receiver is, and I'm going to be in his hip pocket. Mm-hmm. Bradley Roby has that ability.
The Texans' safeties are good, too. I mean, Justin Reed, Tayshaun Gibson, Jahlil Adai, we're not complaining about the safeties. So you've upgraded at corner with Roby over Kareem Jackson. Your safety position is fine. That's why I think that Bradley Roby is kind of the winner of that little fake, quote-unquote, trade between Roby and Kareem Jackson. He's also cheaper. I mean, you got him on a much cheaper deal. You got him on a short-term deal. Now you might have to pay him this offseason, which can be a little bit more of a hassle depending on the market for Bradley Roby. One guy that agrees with both of you and disagrees with me is two-time champion Big Alfred Williams. We had him on with Clint Sterner earlier this week. He says the Texans were crazy for letting Kareem Jackson go.
I doubt if there are four better safeties in all of football right now that are playing a better brand of football than Kareem Jackson. I don't know what Houston saw or didn't see in him, but that dude is a straight baller. And trust me, in the land of great safeties that we've had around here, all the way from Billy Thompson to Steve Atwater, Dennis Smith, John Lynch, but this guy profiles like Brian Dawkins. This guy profiles like all the great safeties that have ever played here. He's unafraid. He sticks his head in there. I mean, I just love the guy. I watch him. And I just say, man, I wish I could play with that dude because he plays with the kind of fire and energy that it takes to play this game. And it's just fun to see him. There's no way in the world that Houston got that one right.
Well, that's high praise. Top five safety in the entire NFL. Houston, no way that they got it right, even though I think they upgraded at corner and their safety position is a position of strength.
I'll tell you what, when the deal first happened and Kareem signed with the Denver Broncos, I felt exactly the way Big Al is talking about right here now. I thought that the Texans had got it wrong. They made a mistake and that Tayshaun Gibson was not going to be able to replace him at the safety position. And whoever they got at corner, you should have had K-Jack on this team. But as time has passed, and although Kareem is still doing what I thought he would do out there in Denver, what the Texans have gotten back with Gibson and Roby and bringing in Hargraves and Connolly, what they've done at the position is upgraded, and they have done it at a more reasonable price. You lost Ty Matthew and you lost Kareem, but you ended up upgrading the position overall. So you got to give credit where credit is due, and I think the Texans made the right moves by letting Kareem go. But, hey, that's some high praise from a legitimate
What I was going to say. I'm not going to pretend that I've broken down tape on Kareem Jackson's 2019 season. I've seen some games. I've watched him. I appreciate him, and I've watched him more than your average Bronco defender because he played here. But I'm not going to say, oh yeah, he's right, or oh no, he's wrong. I do trust him though. You know, that dude played, and he knows what he's doing, and he sees them a lot more than I do. I think it's fine. I always say this: if a trade doesn't hurt, then it probably wasn't a good trade.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about that. You know, it hurts to trade a good player, but if you get what you want in return, it hurt them. You know, if a trade doesn't hurt, it wasn't a good trade. It hurts the Texans not to have Kareem, but they did just fine. You know, that's fine. You, right. you got good safeties. You got the corner you want.
Win-win. Win-win is a good way to describe it. OG, John Lopez, Jeremy Branham, Wade Smith in for Landry Locker. Well, the Rockets got the response that they needed last night in Toronto. They had all the drama earlier in the week, the blown dunk by Harden. Well, the referee's blown dunk of Harden's dunk. But more importantly, blowing a 22-point lead against San Antonio, blowing a 9-point lead with 2.5 minutes left to play. I was really worried that this was going to kind of spiral out of control. Rockets did file their protest yesterday, by the way, but they went up to Toronto and they beat a good Raptors team. Like, I understand Kawhi Leonard's no longer there and his humor is no longer there, but that Raptors team 15-5 going into that game last night. They're a good home team. It's tough to go into Canada and beat Toronto, and the Rockets did that. They won by 10. They cruised to victory, but it was the way that they did it that encouraged me. One, putting this all behind them, all this protest stuff behind them. But the two, winning a game in which James Harden only took 11 shots.
Yeah, and what do you have, 6 points in the first half? Yep. Something like that. I don't think this was a real complicated game in terms of why they won. I mean, they knocked down shots with role players. I mean, the guys off the bench, I think Daniel House, I saw, you know, 10 out of 19 from three-point range, three of their bench players. You go 10 out of 19 from three-point range, you're probably going off the bench, you're probably going to win that game. So it was a simple concept. It went in.
Yeah, and I liked what I saw out of Clint Capela on the defensive end. He was doing a good job of D'ing people up on the ball and off the ball, guarding the net. I thought towards the end of the ball game, Westbrook did a good job of having being the guy with the ball in his hands, penetrating and getting to the basket and distributing or finishing. In the middle of the game, though, he's still struggling with that mid-range jumper, and his three-point shot was still off. But anytime that you can use your role players to get you a win on the road like that, to me, that bodes well of what you're going to do going forward for the season. You want to get those guys as confident as possible, especially on the road. So that was a good win for the Houston Rockets.
I found those numbers. McLemore, Tucker, and Daniel House were 41 of 63. And they scored 41 of 63 first half points and were 14 of 25 from the field, 10 of 19 from three-point range. That's the recipe right there.
McLemore hit 8 three-pointers by himself, a career high for him. He started yesterday's game with Daniel House coming off the bench. D'Antoni looking for a little bit more spark off the bench with Eric Gordon being out. I read more into that game than you guys did. The reason why was how Nick Nurse and the Raptors were defending Harden. They were hedging the screens hard. They were double-teaming
Harden.
Forcing the ball out of his hands, and they won a game in which Harden wasn't James Harden, wasn't leading the league in NBA scoring like he currently does. So I found it encouraging that the Rockets, they found a way to be offensive, nearly 120 points, in a game where the other coach and the other team was forcing the ball out of Harden's hands. I thought that was a great sign going forward, despite Russell Westbrook, again, being off with the shot.
Yeah, and you have to do that. James Harden has to be able to facilitate to the other guys when teams are going to decide to take him away, when they're going to double him early in the shot clock, when they're going to force somebody out to beat him. You have to be one of those other guys to say, oh, you're going to leave me wide open. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to make you pay. It's almost like in football where you say, if you give me a one-on-one matchup, I'm going to win it. If I don't win a one-on-one matchup, then I don't belong. Well, if you're going to give me open shots, I'm going to hit them. Basketball players, NBA basketball players take open threes like people take free throws in their garage, in their backyard. Like that, they should be able to hit those shots. And so by them doubling James Harden early in the shot clock, like they, you're getting an opportunity to swing the ball around and get somebody open. Look,
what
they got to put
just
it down
said
and finish.
Is the absolute key. When you play isolation, high screen and roll or whatever it is, the ball stops. It's iso ball. I mean, that by definition, that's what they call it. When you're getting the ball out of James Harden's hands and he's being double teamed, the ball automatically has to move more because nobody else is going to be iso.
Yeah.
You know, and so the ball's moving more. They had, I don't know what their total assist number were, but I know they had 13 in the second half.
29 in the game.
Yeah, they had 13 in the second half down the stretch when Harden was not really, you know, getting the isos. The ball moves better. And so we were talking about this yesterday, how it's how, you know, he's great. It's awesome. We love him. But it's just kind of boring to watch. That wasn't so boring to watch because they're moving the ball. They're snapping into their offense a little bit, and Harden's not getting his, but they're scoring.
Yeah, Russell Westbrook with 8 turnovers, something that they needed limited as well. John Lopez, the OG, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham, in for Landry Locker. Sports Illustrated, they did something kind of funny last night. Mm-hmm. They grabbed J.J. Watt's past tweets that all have to do with food takes. J.J. Watt likes to talk about food on social media, on
God
Hard
bless
Knocks,
him for that.
Just about everywhere. Kind of like us. I mean, yeah. Who doesn't like food? We all love food a little bit too much, we would all say. So let's get to some of these J.J. Watt hot food takes and see if we agree with them, if we don't agree with them. Let's see if J.J. knows what he's talking about. Here's his first one. He had a conversation with Vince Wilfork back in the Hard Knocks days. And Hard Knocks got he and Vince talking about brunch. Do we agree with J.J. on this take?
Breakfast is the best.
Brunch? Brunch is my favorite meal of all time. Brunch is the greatest thing in the world.
I can pass on it. Like, dinner is whatever.
Yeah. Dinner is, yeah. But brunch? It's a brunch. Breakfast and brunch, you don't mess around with breakfast. Oh. I can eat breakfast 3 meals a day. No
problem. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. My wife, Bianca, she makes a, it's like a croissant bread. And inside of it, you can put whatever, bacon, you can put eggs, you can put sausage, you can put ham inside of it and bake it.
Okay. So here's what you're going to tell Bianca next off day. I'm coming. That's what I want.
So good. And you slice it like bread.
Come on.
Do you agree with what J.J. Watt had to say?
Hey, first of all, why is Vince Wilfork not selling or being the brand ambassador for like Waffle House or IHOP? When you were listening to him describe,
well, he
that
does
food,
killings.
Didn't that sound good to you?
Yeah.
Like, Kuna's like, man, he makes this croissant bread. I'm like, damn, I'm starting to get hungry. But yeah, man, I agree with him. Breakfast and brunch, to me, I could eat breakfast every day. I could eat breakfast every meal every day. Like, that is the best meal. When we do breakfast for dinner, and as a family, my daughters all get excited. Oh, we have breakfast for dinner. That is always a good time. And then when we were in school, remember when you had breakfast for lunch?
Mm-hmm.
Those were the best things where you got you some pancakes or some waffles and you get you some sausage and some eggs, man. It's nothing like it. So I definitely agree.
I love brunch. I'm don't get me wrong. I don't totally agree because I started thinking about this. I gave it a lot of thought, boys. The best meal of the day, and it doesn't happen every day, but the best meal I look forward to is when you go out, maybe you went to with some friends to their house, to a party, house party, or to a wedding, or out with friends. That late night, you're a little tipsy, you know, you go into the refrigerator, there's leftovers from a really good meal. That late night, really like 2 a.m. gorge fest. That is an awesome meal every time you do it.
I'm a big fan of the 2 a.m. meal, yeah. But the 2 a.m. meal is always at Waffle House or somewhere,
yeah, or
Whataburger.
Somewhere. Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, I'm definitely a fan of that, especially when you got a little alcohol in your system.
Yeah, man.
And then you got that.
You're tired.
Some breakfast tacos or breakfast taquitos from mm-hmm. Whataburger at 2:30 in the morning. There's nothing like it. So you're right. That is a hell of a meal.
That's
for
a
sure.
hell of a meal.
I think J.J. Watt called Vince Wilfork's wife the wrong name. B-Mac, listen back to that whenever you can. I think because Vince says my wife, Bianca, and I think that J.J., when he invites himself over, calls Vince's wife a different name. We'll report back on that. I disagree with Vince Wilfork, though. Dinner is the best. Like, all's well that ends well. And dinner is what caps off your days of eating. Like, mm-hmm. I look forward to dinner more than any other. Now, if it's breakfast for dinner, that's fine. I love breakfast food. Mm-hmm. But you have to have a strong dinner to cap off your day. That's my feeling on it. What else did J.J. Watt
Let's go through
say?
Some of his. They went through all his tweets. This was a great little story by SI. This is J.J. tweeting, churros or churros, depending on how you want to and who you're talking to, should be more common. I think he's got the wrong Mexican sweet bread.
I'm not a fan
what
of churros.
What are you, a pan dulce guy?
Pan dulce, man. Dulce? Like an empanada or something like that.
I like an empanada. Churros are good. I feel like they should be more of
a
thing.
Aren't they for kids?
No, I mean, it's good for everybody. You like ice cream, don't you? Ice cream's kind of more true. For kids.
I'm going to be honest with you, man. When it comes to Mexican food and food from that region of the world, I'm not a big fan of the sweets.
Of their sweet
bread? I'm a fan of everything else.
Yeah, that's their breads.
But I'm not a big fan
downfall.
Of like all of the, really? You know, the sweets. The
I
Mexican
can go
sweets.
To a panaderia every day and I weigh 400 pounds. I love them.
I think I'm on some many of this one. Like, give me the fajitas, give me the enchiladas,
give
me
the
everything.
Food.
Yeah,
everything. I'm like literally everything else.
Everything
even
else.
The chips and salsa.
Tequila, all that stuff.
I'll take the pre-dinner more than the post-dinner. All right.
That. But the sweets, I'm not in.
The next from J.J. Watt. Melon, honeydew, and cantaloupe are filler fruits on a fruit plate.
Couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. Absolutely right.
No, that's untrue. The honeydew? Right, honeydew is lit.
I love honeydew.
Cantaloupe?
Really?
Yes.
Give me the watermelon. Get all that stuff out of here. Give me watermelon. Yeah,
Smitty, I'm with you 100%.
You with me,
I'm with you 100%, but here's the thing. People are either melon people or not. It's kind
of
like you are or you're not.
I'm a fan of
melon. I'm a huge fan of melon. Watermelon, honeydew melon. Why are you a fan of melons, I wonder? But anyway.
I just am.
Cantaloupe.
I just am.
Well, about the loopholes, too. 713-572-4610. Let us know, loopholes. Where are we getting it wrong? Where's J.J. Watt getting it wrong? Where does watermelon fall in the melon, honeydew, cantaloupe category?
I like honeydew best. A good honeydew is the best. And then I got cantaloupe and watermelon probably tie.
Man, watermelon's by far
I would say
favorite.
Watermelon, then honeydew, then cantaloupe.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's another one. J.J. Watt. I'll just do the top five. Top five cereals. Crunch Berries, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Frosted Flakes, Lucky Charms, Honey Bunches of Oats. If you don't have Fruit Loops in your top five, you're doing it wrong. I like most of his.
That's a terrible list. That's a terrible
a
list.
That was a bad list.
Fruit Loops for me is...
But is it Fruit Loops or Fruity Pebbles?
Fruity Pebbles.
No, I'm a bigger fan of Fruity Pebbles
and
than Fruit Loops.
That's kind of like melon or not melon. I'm a Fruit Loops guy.
Okay. I like Cocoa Pebbles when I was a kid. I haven't had Cocoa Pebbles in probably a decade, but Cocoa Pebbles was by far my favorite cereal.
And I have a cereal that I know I like that most people don't, but I could eat it every day, and that's Honeycomb.
Honeycomb, that's lit.
I love honeycomb.
Yes, and I haven't had it in a while.
I know.
But I go through stages where I'm gonna knock off honeycombs every morning for about a month. Mm-hmm. Honeycombs is up there. Honey Nut Cheerios. That's the cereals I eat to where I feel good about myself after I'm done.
I don't know anybody that doesn't like that.
Yeah, but Cocoa Pebbles, Fruity Pebbles, and Cocoa Crisp, all of those are good.
713-572-4610. I have a real problem with one fruit.
What's that?
I'll let you know. I have a real problem with one fruit, and maybe you have some problems.
I have problems with a lot of different
with
things.
With a lot of different foods.
We're going to get
a
to
lot
that.
Of different
There's
things.
A fruit.
I want to go back to that.
That actually might be true in this case.
Let's go back to that JJ with Vince Wilfork. He did get Vince's wife's name wrong, by the way.
I can eat breakfast three meals a day. No
oh,
problem.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife, Bianca, she makes a, it's like a croissant bread. And inside of it, you can put whatever, bacon, you can put eggs, you can put sausage, you can put ham inside of it and bake it.
Okay. So here's what you're going to tell Bianca next off
what?
Day.
What did he say?
I'm coming.
I don't know what he said.
He said Bianca.
But
he said the same name. All right, you got it.
So here's what you're going to tell Bianca.
He just didn't quite say it like Vince Wilfork said.
We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. OG John Lopez. OG Jeremy Branham Wade Smith in for Landry Locker. When we come back, we're going to get the OG's irrational hate for a certain fruit.
Yes.
Also, Texans running game. Watson isn't doing it. The Texans need to do it better against the Broncos on Sunday as you listen to Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.